This piece was brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, heritagefoodsusa.com.
Hey, 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 I'm Jimmy Carboni from Beer Sessions Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, this is Greg Blaze. Welcome to another episode of Cutting the Curd, broadcasting live on the Heritage Radio Network. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram. Cutting the Curd is one word. It's Monday, March 9th. Feels a lot like spring here in New York. It's also the day after daylight savings, which has basically turned me into a zombie. I have no idea what's going on right now. I'm exhausted. But I am very, very excited to have Lark Gilmer Smotherman on the line today. How are you today, Lark?
I'm doing great and basking in the sun in glorious Montana.
That's awesome. We just rediscovered the sun in New York City. It was awesome. I had forgotten about it for a while. My life had become very gray, but I'm glad that it's, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's nice and balmy here in Montana. So, yeah, we've had an unusual bit of warm weather, so it's been great.
That's nice. And you also have a lack of humans in Montana.
I think we reached a million people, though.
Hey, congratulations.
Not too long ago.
I think
yeah,
I walked by a million people getting here today. So, it's the exact opposite. But I want to really thank you for coming on today. Lark is the shepherd and owner of Poor Orphan Creamery in Luray, Montana. And Luray is a sort of a bastardization of the actual French pronunciation of the hamlet that it used to be. That's correct. Is it? Is it not? It's the pronunciation in French a little different, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's correct. It's spelled Lorne, but it's pronounced Luray because it was originally founded by a Quebecois back at turn of the century when there used to be like 10,000 people living here during the gold rush, and now we're down to 10.
Jesus. I'm a Quebecois. That's my dad. So, you know, I can try to send some family members out there if you want. You know, we can bulk that number up. So you
wonderful.
You are the a pioneer in so many ways. You have opened up the first sheep dairy, and you are the first artisan cheese manufacturer in Montana. That's correct. Is it not?
Yes, that is correct. Yeah. It took some heavy lifting to convince the state to allow us to do Montana's first portable milking parlor. And then, of course, to be Montana's first sheep dairy was kind of unusual for really a beef state. So, we've done a lot of firsts for the state, but they've been behind us 100%, and it's been a good relationship, and they've been very supportive.
Well, that's fantastic, yes. And I had forgotten to mention that you also opened the first grade A portable milking parlor in the state as well. That's a lot of work, man. Congratulations. That's really awesome. I really think that's awesome.
Yeah, it's been nothing short of biblical.
I know. I read that. I read your short bio, and I
but
love...
we are there at last. Hurrah.
Yeah, so, you made it, baby.
Yeah,
you made
fantastic.
It.
It's wonderful to be making cheese.
It is. I when I read your bio on your website, I loved one of the things you said on there. You said that in Basque country, you discovered that sheep can be milked and it makes the most glorious cheese, which I agree with. My personal favorite cheeses are made of sheep's milk. An epiphany of many that have forged a life in the fragile spaces, all in all weathers, creating something that is very much heaven sent. That's a really awesome quote. And I've been lucky enough to travel through the Pyrenees Mountains. I haven't been there in 20 years. But I love the cheeses that come from that region, you know, both French, mostly the French, but in the Spanish part as well. But there's just something about the texture and the flavor and the rind and the color and the whole style, and also the way that the cooperative shepherds worked together, after I had returned from Basque country, you know, I started working with cheese shortly thereafter, just how the recipes are passed down and how the milk gets divided up. I just thought the whole place was really magical and cool. So I imagine you think the same thing, thinking, you know, or along those same lines, given the bio that you wrote on your website.
Yeah, and just having a culture over there that supports the artisanal food practice. You know, every family has a land-based practice of some sort, and just the way that they caretake the mountains, and they each town supports a farm to make sure that they have local food. So they really have some practices that go way back to medieval times, you know, that have supported that culture and shored it up and created this incredible food culture that's handcrafted. And going over there, everyone would ask me, which I thought was really an unusual introduction, but they would ask me what my goal was. They would Right. sit me down at their big farm table, and I just thought that was a wonderful lead-in, and so gracious and generous on their part. And they took me in, showed me their craft, shared their stories with me, and allowed me to make cheese with them. And it was a great experience.
No, that's amazing. I understand that too, because it really lets you know how important it is. What you're doing is as in, they just want to make sure that what you're doing is as important as what they're doing on some level, you know. And I love that. I love that when people take things that seriously, but not in an aggressive way or a negative way, but they just, you know, like I always view cheese making and the jobs that we do, and I love what I do. It destroys me sometimes, and then it rebuilds me all the time, you know. But it's the, we support this way of life that is absolutely leaving this earth, and it's up to people like that and people like you to keep those traditions alive. I feel so when you. I'm sorry.
Absolutely. I mean, I do feel like I've been charged with this responsibility, this legacy of paying it forward, you know, kind of passing it along. And one of the unseen value that I hadn't considered at the beginning of this was the educational piece, you know, kind of being the piper in our rural Montana when the kids come to town, and really opening their eyes to what we do all the way from the ground through to the finished product. You can really see them looking at food completely different. And so that has become a real important side to what we do. So it's really not just about the cheese per se. It's really about the teaching of it as well.
No, it's a lifestyle. Look, we're having a tiny bit of scratchiness talking to you, so I'm going to take a really, really short break because I really am interested in what you want to, you know, what you're talking here, and I feel like I could go on for a long time asking you these questions. So we're just going to take a tiny break, and we're going to call you right back. Take care. Lark, we're back. How are you?
You sound so much better.
You too. Now, where were we? I feel like what you said was so poignant, and I even though I never met you, I feel like I know you because I think of things that way as well. So that the segue into what I was going to ask you. You were speaking of you were at the table in this. You know, the shepherds were kind of making sure that you were on the level, you know, and you wanted to, you know, that you were worthy of the milk and worthy of the craft, and which I'm sure you took to heart. And now you have your own creamery called Poor Orphan. And I was wondering if you could tell me, because I feel it has to do with the thing you were saying right at the end before we got cut off about taking younger children and explaining to them that circle of agricultural life. And I feel like maybe the name of your dairy might have something to do with that.
Yeah, in a way it does. It really speaks to community here in Luray. The town founders actually never had any children of their own, and they ended up raising 18 children off the land here. They were incredibly generous, and so it's really focusing on that piece, that piece of generosity that is inherent really in the community here and throughout the Ruby Valley of Montana. That generosity of all my neighbors, for example, who have ranches around, have allowed us to graze our sheep through as weed and fire control at literally next to nothing cost.
That's great.
Because we have a weed eradication law here in Montana that's kind of expensive. So it's a really great way of working together. It's a win-win for both of us, and then we get to produce this incredible product. So it really speaks to the generosity of the town founders, and then really to the whole community where I live. Without them, this would have never happened.
That's fantastic. So, that's a great story about. So the sheep are they not your sheep? Are you using milk from neighboring farms sheep to make your cheeses, or? Or are they all yours?
Icelandic sheep. They're really a perfect breed for uh-huh. Montana, and they're very, my flock anyway, is really friendly. So
oh, yeah.
For an educational too, when people come in, they just fall in love with the flock, and they're just so easy to be with. And my ICs are pretty big producers for that breed. And then I also during the shoulder months outside
yeah.
of the sheep milking season, I purchased milk from the prison dairy in Deer Lodge.
Oh, wow.
And back in the day, you know, there used to be small dairies every 20 miles, but now they're further and farther afield.
Yeah.
So Deer Lodge is about an hour and a half away from us, and it's the only processing plant where I can actually purchase cream for our triple creams. And they're wonderful to work with. They have 35,000 acres of the most pristine Montana pasture, and their milk is wonderful. And so it's kind of an exciting, again, collaboration between like-minded you know, dairy people to produce a really good product. So right now we are using their cow milk to make cow milk cheeses.
That's fantastic. Like, man, you're making me want to move to Montana, especially because I've had a crappy winter here and people have been on top of me. So I feel like Montana is this beautiful place with not a lot of people, well-tended animals, and good, and good agricultural practices. Even though I've never been there, I'm like one of those terrible people that just goes from coast to coast. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I'm like, Montana's in the middle of somewhere. I know the shape of it from the map that I was given when I was, you know, it was in geography class. But actually, I have a really good friend who's from there that wants to that he's moving back out there to work with animals and to work with food because he came out to work here with me a long time ago. Worked with me at Dean and DeLuca, and then decided that he had enough of New York, but he learned enough about food or the end product of food that he realized where he was from was the base from where a lot of the things that we sell here come from, which I think is an interesting, although backwards way to learn how to do everything.
Well, you should take your show on the road.
I would love to take my show on the road.
Come out here. And you could do it live from Montana.
I will. I'm down. I just got to get a Heritage to sponsor me. But Jack's in the booth there, and he's laughing at me through the glass. So, but I'm gonna have to do a little fundraiser for that one. But I wanted to ask you, what was your like? So you went and you were in Basque Country, and you met these gentlemen. But what was your personal journey to becoming a shepherd and cheesemaker, and also like logistically, how did you learn the nuts and bolts of raising sheep and making cheese? Because a lot of folks dream of doing what you're doing, but could you tell us a bit about the practical aspects of how you got there? Like, how did you fund your creamery, and what sort of challenges did you encounter, and are you encountering as you attempt to grow?
How much time do we have?
As much time as you want, my friend.
So just to try and get it in a nutshell, I have forged two practices kind of parallel. One was a commercial photography practice, which I forged in England and Europe is where I got my start. And then I also had an interest in sheep. And people go, well, how did you get interested in sheep? And really the answer to that is that no one actually chooses this practice. You're really called to it. And that's really the best way to say it. And so while I was doing the photography practice, I was searching out shepherds, you know, wherever I was doing a shoot or something like that, and would engage with them. And sheep people are the most generous people in the world. And so they would spend time with me and show me their way of doing things. And where I was living at the time, my flatmate, I was in Oxford, my flatmate happened to be the son of the head cheese guy in Europe, which was Major Patrick Rance. And
he's written a book or two that people have heard of.
Yes. I'm sure lots of cheese people have his tomes on their coffee table, as I do.
Amazing stuff.
But that was really my first introduction into artisan and farmstead cheeses.
Yeah.
Being a sole American in the flat, I'd get invited to everyone's house for the holidays.
That's awesome.
And their house was incredible, right next to the cheese shop in Streatley.
Uh-huh.
And he'd give us a plate, open the door, and just say, you know, go pick out your cheese. And then it was to his delight when we brought the cheese back in, he would then, you know, gleefully see what we had on our plate and then go into the narrative of the cheesemakers that the cheese represented. And at the same time, I was, you know, connected with the shepherds and sheep people in England as well. And so it was, you know, it's been an interesting path that I've had, like the photography, the introduction to the cheesemongering side, and then the sheep. And then it wasn't until I got to the Basque Country that all the shepherds there made their own cheese, and I had my little epiphanal moment.
Right.
And that's where all the roads came together, because in the United States, it's really hard to pencil it out with just sheep alone. And the value-added piece of the cheese really helps make it possible.
Absolutely.
And I also knew from having lived abroad that you needed to have the land for next to nothing. Real estate out in Montana is like 17,000 an acre, so really, economically, it doesn't pencil out that way. So we had to do the exchange for the weed and fire control in order to make that happen.
That was a great trade-off on your part.
Yeah, it really was a win-win, and I'm not sure how many other states have that as part of their law, but it certainly helped. It helped us get the pasture that we needed. And where Luray sits, we're actually surrounded by land trust pasture, so it's been a perfect location for it.
It's not going away. Yeah, it's not. Yeah, there. I understand what you mean there. That's fantastic. That's fantastic.
And then, you know, then I started shadowing cheesemakers. Finding cheesemakers that were really good at their craft, and then just, you know, working for free with them to learn the craft from them. And it's a very similar path to what I did as a photographer. I would apprentice with professional shooters all over the world, and that's how I learned my photography practice. And, you know, then as far as the parlor goes, because we didn't actually own land, the parlor had to be portable. And the state actually got behind us. The state of Montana has a growth through agriculture grant, and they awarded us three grants, one for the parlor, one for the construction, and another one for equipment, that really helped get us going. Since then, we've also received other grants from the federal government for solar power, because the utility cost can go through the roof, and it's tough to dial it in at first. And so that's always been, that's been really helpful. So a lot of people like what we're doing.
Well, they like
what we're doing it here in Montana, and they've been giving us the grant opportunities to start.
Well, what's great about that is that, you know, as a cheesemonger, you know, customers, you know, I'm at the very end of a large funnel, you know, and I'm the guy that stands there and says, yes, that piece of cheese cost you $12.50, and yes, it was $36 a pound, and people don't really understand the costs, the hidden costs, you know, or the work that someone like you is obviously, you guys have done the work. You searched, you found the money, you got the federal government to give you the money, you got the state government to give you the money, and you worked with the agriculture that was already there, and you did that also that you could survive and be sustainable and protect your way of life, which is why, again, I really enjoy to talk to you about that sort of thing. That's really the only way to do it, right? I mean, otherwise, you can't. The cheese just becomes too expensive. The whole process just becomes so expensive if you don't take advantage of those grants and of that money that's available to you.
That's correct. And, you know, that land piece really makes it not doable sometimes for people and who really want to do the practice. And that's, yeah, it really comes down to trying to shave as much as you can
in
certain areas just to be able to do agriculture.
You have to find the money. Yeah. There is money out there. It's hidden. You know what I mean? But there is money, or there is ways to save that it's hidden. Or at least that's just my cynical view of the, you know, of the world, you know? I've always felt in my life that everybody's always trying to take away everything that I love and that's good. And so I try to fight for it, you know. So, but you're obviously, you know, you were like, no, these are just good ideas. You weren't like, yeah, screw you, I got that money.
Yeah, I tell people I'm a little bit of a border collie and a Jack Russell. I used to say that the project, getting it off the ground, was epic, but now I say biblical because it really conveys what it takes. You know, you can't, there are so many regulations that are in place for a reason, and it's hard to really navigate them. Most people would cry uncle and stop.
And
you,
I
really
think that's the whole point of half of those regulations is like,
yeah, you have to really not take no for an answer.
Yeah.
And part of the presentation is, you know, getting so many people on board and also educating them on the process. Because where I am, there aren't that many cheesemakers.
Right.
And there aren't that many dairy people. So
no, people want that beef cattle out there.
And that it's not scary.
Right. And it is. And it is scary to a lot of people. It's which is funny to me as I've worked with cheese for so long, how not scary it is to me. How just ass backwards something like is that it's completely acceptable practice to jam massive amounts of live animals into a stockyard, chop them up in less than optimal conditions, and then sell those out, you know, rife with disease, but you spoil your milk, then you salt it and protect it so that it doesn't even need a damn refrigerator, but they don't, but that frightens people. You know what I mean? Like that's something that they don't understand. So that's my little rant
day. And partly it's because we're like two generations removed from that practice.
Yeah.
You know, and I think this next generation coming in has really showed a passion for connecting to the land and gaining
some
of those practices back. We get a lot of woofers and interns coming through, you know, who are like in their 20s who really want to connect and know that they're missing that piece. They get the, you know, the human connection, but it's really important to connect to the land too. And so we get a lot of, you're familiar with woofers, right?
I am not. Talk to me about that. I may be familiar with it,
okay.
But
this
I just don't know by that name.
It's all over the world. It's called the Worldwide Organization of Organic Farmers, and I hope I've said that correctly, but it's WWOOF. And,
yes.
So we have an organic practice. Our farm is on there, and anyone, and they have organizations in every country. So if you want to go work at, on a vineyard in Argentina,
you're there.
You just go onto the Argentina website.
Yeah.
And basically, I, the woofers that I've received are kind of jaded corporate climbers from New York City.
You got to work those people to death, babe.
Who want to reconnect with the land.
Yeah.
And they take 3 months off, sometimes 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And they come out and they work a minimum of 35 hours with us in exchange for room and board. And I've just been really, really blessed. I mean, they've been
incredible
people with these amazing backgrounds and education. And you know, they come to the farm really not knowing anything about livestock or farming or milking or anything. And yet we troubleshoot all the time, right? There's always something that goes wrong. And
sure.
They bring their practice, and we come up with this really amazing creative solution that, you know, without them probably would have never happened. And so,
that's great.
Yeah, it's just
and
been,
free
you know,
labor is the best.
From nuclear physicists to, you know, Asian acupuncturists and just a really wealth of backgrounds. So it's a really great organization. And then we also get interns from the colleges and through NCAT, which is the National Center of Alternative Technologies, as well, also has an organization that connects people.
You need free labor. You need minions. When I've trained, you need minions.
Yes, you can never have enough minions.
You can never have enough minions.
There's always something to do.
Well, the thing is, so for cheesemongers, like I said, at the other end of that funnel in smaller places, when I used to run the Bedford cheese shop, we were a tiny, tiny little cheese shop in Williamsburg. It's much better and bigger place now. But when I was when it was in my stead, I would get people coming in all the time, and they'd be like, well, can we just hang out in here? And be like, hell yeah, sweep that floor, wrap that cheese, do this, you know what I mean? And you get a lot. But they learned, and I found a lot of those people, they stayed with it somehow, you know, because they got to touch and handle the food, you know. I don't know how many of the executives that came out there to work with you and then found themselves elbow deep inside a sheep one day. I don't know if they went back and did that, but it's a great learning process. And the problem is that when you are working for a larger corp, see, that's great that on the farm side, and then on the cheese making side, that you can get supported to have that kind of labor. In places like where I work, they're so concerned about the liability of someone nicking themselves with a slicer or bumping into a door that I can't get that free labor as easily as I could have, because you know, we're so litigious as a society now. But that was the end of my second rant. So I'm sorry.
There's always those concerns, you know, and I tell people, you know, it's stuff is going to happen.
It is.
You know, it's egg, you know, just be prepared for anything. And I think they like that.
I think it's good for people.
You know,
it reconnects people with reality, you know, with sitting in front of a desk and a computer all day is not reality. You know, what you do is real. You know, you're out there working with your hands, and yeah, maybe you will sprain your ankle or you'll get kicked by an animal or something will happen, but whatever, you know, that's life, right? I mean,
you have so many more rewards
so
on a daily
more.
Basis, you know, where, you know, you're, you know, especially during lambing, you know,
there's
so many things that happen. And you can actually make a difference with that in that animal.
That's beautiful.
With that animal and the shepherding practice alone, you're outside and you're a land steward, not just an animal steward. And every day there's some kind of urgent need.
Yeah.
You know.
I would imagine so.
And you just don't have that in any other job, at least that I've had in corporate America, and it's And I guess my life is a little bit different in that I have a lot of connection to Mother Nature, you know, and very little connection to humans. And so my pendulum has kind of swung the other direction. And so I get my human connections at the farmers markets, you know, talking with you, and then,
yeah,
you know, the interns that come to us.
But the window through which you see the world are the animals and the products that they make, and then and that whole life, which I totally respect. Look, we're going to have to take one more short break, but I want to talk to you about your upcoming workshop and about the kind of cheeses you make. So just hang out with me for a little while longer, and we'll be right back on Cutting the Curd.
Sounds good.
Since 2001, Heritage Foods USA has sold pasture-raised, antibiotic-free heritage meats to restaurants and homes around the country. Our farmers raise their animals with care using traditional methods, guaranteed to produce the very best-tasting meat. Our pork breeds include Berkshire, Red Wattle, Duroc, Gloucester Old Spot, Large Black, and Tamworth, and our beef comes from Piedmontese, Angus Akiyushi, Belgian Blue, Highland, Simmental, and Belted Galloway cattle. We also carry a rotation of 24 rare breeds of heritage chicken, seasonal specialties like lamb, goat, geese, and of course, heritage turkeys. Visit us online at www.heritagefoodsusa.com or give us a call at 718-389-0985 to place your order today.
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd, broadcasting live on the Heritage Radio Network. Before the break, we were talking with Lark of Poor Orphan Creamery, and we still will be. Now, I'd love to talk a little bit more about your cheeses and also about your upcoming cheese-making workshop. Maybe we can start out with that. You can tell us a little bit about what that's going to be all about.
Well, Michael Kalish is coming and giving a workshop on, we're going to do 3 cheeses in 3 days. So it's a real cheese-making intensive. It's a perfect workshop for somebody who thinks they want to do this practice. And you'll be able to get your hands in the vat. You'll be the one pouring the milk in, going through the whole process. A lot of cheese workshops that I've been to in the past, you know, most of the time the milk is already in the vat. And I think it's so important for people to actually experience the whole process so they really know what it takes, you know, and from start to end. And that includes all the cleanup.
Yeah.
So, as they say, you know, cheese making is 95% washing. And
yes, it
so
is.
True.
I've scrubbed out some vats in my day.
And so that's happening on March 27th through the 30th. We have a little social gathering here in Luray Friday, happy hour, and then we hit the ground running at 8 o'clock Saturday and Sunday and Monday with making 3 different cheeses. So it's a really good experience. And the 3 cheeses we're making are Fontina, Telagio, and then the Latex set cheeses, starting with Fromage Blanc. So... yeah, it'll be great, and then you'll get to be in Montana and do all the stuff that we do with us.
That sounds fantastic. How do people, if someone wanted to sign up for the workshop, how would they find out about it? They just Google Poor Orphan Creamery, or is there a particular way or a phone number they should call or anything just to get, you know, to get in touch with you?
Well, there are 3 ways to do it. The first one is through brown paper tickets. If they go online and punch in cheeseworkshop.brownpapertickets.com, you'll see the workshop there, and they can buy their tickets online. They can email me at pocreamery@gmail.com. And they can also call the creamery here, which is 406-842-7100. And, you know, flights from New York... I don't think they're that expensive right now, are they?
No one's going to Montana, babe. No one's going out there. We can get out there cheap. But
So we're going to start doing these on a more regular basis. And yeah. Michael Kalish has an incredible background. He kind of paralleled mine. He was in Italy. I was in France. And
maybe you can tell us a little bit about Michael and what you know who he is and how he and his brother he has a twin brother named Charlie.
They're in business together, uh-huh. And they're incredibly handsome guys too, by the way. But they also started a business as a dairy consultant, you know, kind of combining their practice into a business. So they teach classes. They also design cheeses for other cheesemakers, and they also focus on, like, HACCP programs, sanitation for dairies.
These are the guys who need to know.
Is actually thirdworldcheese.com.
Third World Cheese?
But he used to be an affiner for Artisanal in New York City, too, for a while. And
When was he at Artisanal? Only because I also worked there.
I don't know what his years were there. I don't know the year.
I was way back in the beginning. I opened up the artisanal cellars, but that was a crazy job. I couldn't work 20 hours a day. At that time, I also probably wasn't as committed as this gentleman. But he also worked for some of my favorite people from her. They worked for Luigi Gufanti, right down there up in Arona, and he worked for Hervé Mons, and he's. He works with the ACS. That's great. This sounds like a great workshop that people can benefit, you know, a lot from coming to learn how to make cheese with this guy. And you,
we had him out just before the creamery opened and to do an affinage class, and we were packed with cheesemakers from the four surrounding states, which was kind of amazing.
That's great.
And he heard our little ghost town of Luray, and he's a wonderful instructor, so I'm really excited to have him back.
Well, I encourage everybody to check that out, and if you can get out to Montana or you're anywhere near Montana, you know, hot air balloons, trains, cars, whatever you got to do, you just get out there and learn how to make some cheese. I haven't been to a cheese making workshop in way too long. I probably know less now than I did at the beginning, which kind of makes me sad. But that's okay. That's okay because I still get a lot of good cheese. So I really want you also to tell us, you know, we've talked so much about your experience and I really, really love your story and I've enjoyed our conversation. Just it's very obvious to me the passion you have for what you do and all of the decisions you made that have led you to where you are well thought out and you're doing things the right way. So at the end of that, you have these things. They're called cheeses. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about the cheese you make and where we can find it.
Well, our signature sheep milk cheese is called Clover because the love is in the middle of it.
Uh-huh.
And it's a spin-off, the Oso Irati, the Basque, French Basque cheese. And then I also do, and that's a raw milk cheese that
that's
we
great.
Age for a minimum of 5 months. And then I do a Chev style with a sheep milk, and called O Adeline, named after our founder here in Luray. And, sheep milk as a Chev is just delicious. And then I whip it and make a spread with it as well. And then I do a triple cream with a sheep milk, and that's called Constance, named after my neighbor, because she's white and fluffy on the outside and creamy on the center. And,
does she know you think of her this way?
I'm sorry?
Does she know you think of her this way?
Yes.
That's awesome.
She's the town ambassador.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. And then... then I do like 17 different cheeses with the cow milk. We do a herder's curd. We smoke it just very lightly. We do a salty feta. We do a pressed mozzarella. We call it bangle cake because you can dress it up and accessorize it, you know.
Sure.
And then I do a stinky cheese called curmudgeon, named after my other neighbor. And that's washed with a local brew.
Little Scotch ale, it seems, I'm looking at here.
Right. Oh, and I forgot. I also do a Bannon style with the sheep milk.
Oh, wow.
We use a pear brandy that's made locally here as well for that. And then I do a chef style with the cow milk cheese. I do fromage blanc with the cow milk cheese. And we do three different kinds of brie's. A traditional, a Valençay style. And then I kind of mess with it a little bit. Every season I kind of, you know, every couple of weeks I change it up a little bit. Like I put hay with one.
Sure.
Cocoa with another. Because we work with small batches. We have a, which I didn't really realize the value of it until now working with it, is we do a 40-gallon pasteurizer vat. And then
yeah.
we have two other tip vats that are 60 gallons and then each. And so we can have a lot of cheese mix going side by side, but it allows us the versatility to kind of change it up as we need to. So it's not like we're kind of stuck with a 200-gallon vat and only making one kind of cheese. So
you don't sound like that kind of, that's your way. I mean, for you, but that doesn't. I don't know you at all, but that doesn't sound like the thing that would be interesting to you, is doing that massive vat of the same cheese over and over again. But
no, it's, you know, it's part of the creative process. You know,
yeah.
it's kind of like working on a piece of sculpture. You
yep.
know, you just kind of let the process be organic. And so working smaller enables us to do that. And so people have started to look forward to those cheeses that, you know, are just kind of a little bit different. So we have the standard, and then we just kind of shake it up a little.
That's fantastic. Now, you sell, who are your customers? Who do you sell your cheeses to? Is it mostly at the farmers markets or local cheese shops? Or how far away from Montana does your cheese go?
Well, actually, we are sending our first batch of cheese to New York City
really?
Tomorrow. Our cheeses are being featured at Lucy's Way
yep.
in Uptown in Carnegie Hill.
Oh, that's a great shop.
And so our cheeses are now starting to go far and wide, but initially it was through farmers markets, and it's just been so well received, the cheeses that we've been selling out on a regular basis.
Isn't that the best?
Which is a good thing, and so we've upped our production, and now we're going wholesale, and we're in all the obvious places here in Montana, like the co-ops,
yep.
the good food stores, and then we're branching out now in, and now we'll be in New York. So
I'm going to try to buy some of your cheese. I'm just going to warn you right now. I'm going to try to get some if I possibly
okay.
can. But I won't take it away from anybody else, I promise.
Well, yeah, so we're focusing on the wholesale piece right now, and
yeah.
we still have winter farmers markets here in Montana
yeah.
Going, and those are really popular in Bozeman and Missoula and Helena. So yeah.
That sounds great. I got to say, I really enjoyed speaking to you today. We're going to have to wrap it up, but you know, I've learned a couple of great things. I learned about the biblical nature of coming to be a cheesemaker. I learned that if I'm tired of people, I should move to Montana because there are a lot less of them there. I also learned a valuable lesson about daylight savings time, that it completely turns me into a zombie, which isn't cheese related, but completely did anyway. Lark, thank you so much for coming on the show. And make sure, those of you guys who have listened to the show, to check out that cheese making workshop. I'm sure it'll be fantastic. And to all our listeners, I want you to stay tuned next week for another episode of Cutting the Curd, broadcasting live on the Heritage Radio Network.
Thanks so much.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.